Evelyn's going to come up a bit later. Evelyn and I work close together, and we're going to talk about this thing that we're promoting here, which is the Inclusive Tech Lab, which we all... All right, I won't. I'm not going to steal her thunder. But what I'm going to talk about is this really weird, esoteric idea that I have called friction that fits. And a lot of what... we're a really small community. I've ripped out a bunch of slides because a lot of this stuff's been covered today, so I've only left in the weird stuff. So, with that, I'm just going to kind of move on to this notion. Who's seen this? Who saw this sign at the Commons? All right. Inclusion. Big deal around here. We've been working hard at it. Gaming for Everyone, and part of the work that I do is with the is defining Microsoft Inclusive Design. So it is important, and we are, as a company, as Brandon said earlier, taking this very seriously. And I'm going to give you one sort of core tenet of one idea that is sort of central to when we think about inclusive design. And it's this notion that disability is designed. And this idea might seem a little bit odd, but this comes from the redefinition from the WHO of what disability is. So, before 2014, the WHO defined disability as a lot of people think about it as like some sort of physical condition or something like that. But after 2014, they redefined disability to be a mismatch between a person's abilities and the interactions that they do in their environment. Does that make sense? So what this means is disability is actually created by people who make things. And I'll give you an example. I got an Access One controller up here. You can show it later. You guys can come see it later. This is actually a controller that's made for people with disabilities, but I'm going to use it for evil. So what I've done here is I put the A button on the floor, if anyone can see it up here. It's about 5 feet away from the controller. And I put the right trigger about, you know, 5 feet to the left of it. And I defy any of you to come up here and actually use this thing because I've made a controller that makes everyone in this room disabled. When it comes to gaming, I have designed this. So when we think about that idea, that's the sort of central bit about disability is designed. So these are the principles of the Microsoft Inclusive Design practice. I'm going to go through these and we can talk about kind of each one. So the first one is recognize exclusion. Exclusion happens when we solve problems using our own biases. As Microsoft designers, we seek out those exclusions and use them as opportunities to create new ideas and inclusive designs. So we talk about bias a lot. We all sit here and try to figure out how we can be introspective and figure out what our own biases are. And I can give you a kind of a clear example as a Microsoft employee. When I first started at Microsoft, I worked in Dynamics. I didn't go home at night and work on and play with accounting software for 3 hours a night after I got home from work. And I think many of us in this room go home and we play the games that we make and we play the systems that we make. And so it is very easy for us, and this is a double-edged sword, it's good and bad. It's very easy for us to think that we're the customer. Like, I'm the gamer, I'm the customer. But it's really important that we be really introspective and examine those biases and put them in the right perspective. So I just kind of want to put that out there. I never, when I was designing accounting software, I didn't think I represented all accountants. So I went and talked to them. So learn from diversity. Human beings are the real experts in adapting to diversity. Inclusive design puts people in the center from the very start of the process, and those fresh, diverse perspectives are the key to true insight. This is why we did this today. I mean, this is why Brandon organized this thing. He wanted you guys to meet people from the community. And it's important. It's important for us to go out and actually engage with people. You know, Josh has some simulators up here. We have a lot of simulators that we're going to be showing you later today. But the one thing I will say about the simulation tools, the colorblind simulation tools and all that, and Ian touched on this a bit earlier, is that we like to say that they're for ideation and not validation. I don't use simulators in our practice to role play disability. That's insulting. You engage the community. We don't go out there and pretend like I'm blind. Ben would kill me. So that's yeah, that's true. So that's one of the really important things. We really need to engage. And this last bit, Solve for one, extend to many. Everyone has abilities and limits to those abilities. Designing for people with permanent disabilities actually results in designs that benefit people universally. Constraints are a beautiful thing. So kind of like what Ian touched on earlier, it's that notion of what we call the persona spectrum in Microsoft Inclusive Design. If we really target someone with a really extreme need and we solve for their problem, we're gonna see benefits kind of later on. So, you know, we think about this all the time. If we, with the Elite controller, we solve for a lot of things that people, quite frankly, don't use. But some people use it and they love it. And we keep wanting to put more in to make sure that we hit these targets. So, this is another sign that this one didn't last very long, but this was up there. So, this is another aspect of this thing that we need to start thinking about. Yeah. Oh, thank you. She got your back, Ben. This is a picture of a sign that we had on campus, and it says, designing products for 7.4 billion starts with designing for one. And what that means is we don't try to design products for all of us. We aspire to design products for each of us. And that subtle difference is we live with our digital products, we have the ability to make things fit, to make things personal, and to make things that work for you, and just you. And that's what we're trying to aspire to when we talk about Microsoft Inclusive Design. So, is this one going? I think I might have to hit this one. There it goes. This is really dark contrast. This is not very good for this room. So this is the thing that my kid did in Minecraft. It's a picture of a wall that says barriers, and there's a big frowny face. But I could show my kids artwork. But when we think about barriers a lot in games, in accessibility, we often talk about removing barriers. And friction can be a barrier. Friction slows us down. It makes us work harder. And when we design the Xbox shell, I'm on the shell design team, it's very important for us to remove friction. We want to make things effortless. We want to make things intuitive, and friction is the opposite of that. Has anyone seen these photos? So these are photos of four people making some really intense faces. And these are photos by a photographer named Phil Todano. And I saw these pictures first in Jane McGonigal's TED Talk, Gaming Can Make a Better World. And in her talk, she said, if you're not a gamer, you might miss some of the nuance in these photos. You know, you might miss some of the, you probably see the sense of urgency. You probably see a little bit of fear. But you also see intense concentration and deep, deep focus tackling a really wicked problem. These are the faces of people against all odds are on the verge of an epic win, right? And so, as Josh touched on earlier, challenge is why we play games. Games are the combination of assonance and dissonance, conflict and resolution. They're cycles of tension and release. And great games don't remove friction. They have the best friction in the right places. And this is the part of my talk where I feel like I'm just on the verge of getting a little dirty, and I kind of pull it back. So that's where we're at. So when I talk to people about designing stuff, I want people to design things that are challenging and universal. And I talk about that in the terms of I want barriers that are ergonomic. I want people to think about friction that fits. So a lot of us around here are enamored with the ideas. So these are some photos of Microsoft Combat Flight Simulator, because I'm going to be talking about something in the military, and I wanted to have a Microsoft game. So a lot of us in the inclusive design space are enamored with the ideas of Todd Rose from his book, The End of Average. And I want to tell you a story from that book. In the 1940s, the U.S. Air Force had a major problem. Its pilots could not keep control of their planes, and at its worst point, 17 pilots crashed in a single day. The military blamed the men, citing pilot error as the most common reason in crash reports, which seemed reasonable since the planes themselves seldom malfunctioned. Pilots didn't understand it either. The only thing they knew was that it wasn't their piloting skills, They weren't sure what the cause of the problem. If it wasn't human or mechanical error, what was it? So when the first cockpit was designed, the engineers had measured the physical dimensions of hundreds of male pilots. Female pilots were never considered in the 40s. It's kind of a drag. And they used this data to standardize the dimensions of the cockpit. The size and shape of the seat, the distance to the pedals and the stick, the height of the windshield, and the shape of the helmets all conformed to what the average pilot should be. And the military hired a scientist to measure 4,000 pilots. He calculated the average physical dimensions, believed to be the most relative to design, height, chest, sleeve length, and these dimensions formed the average pilot. And then the scientist compared each measurement of each individual pilot to the average. And the consensus among the researchers was that the vast majority of pilots would fall within the average range, right? They were stunned when they tabulated how many pilots actually fell within the average range. Zero. None. Didn't happen. Of 4,000 pilots, no airmen fit within the average range. There was no such thing as an average pilot. If you designed for the average, you were literally designing for no one. So after this, so if you think about that, like from that point of view, they had cockpits where they had seats that didn't adjust. They had like, they couldn't adjust the controls. Like imagine if you got a car and you were like, oh, you're 5'7". This car's for people who are 5'6". Sorry, you need the 5'7" model, right? So out of this work is where ergonomics was born. And we think about that term ergonomics a lot, but this is kind of where it came from. So here's another visual. It's a picture of military uniforms from the Civil War. So long before the 40s, the practices of designing for averages started in the Civil War, because before this, uniforms were custom sewn. But because of the mass quantities of soldiers that they needed to outfit for the Civil War, they started doing mass production. So that's where you get small, medium, and large from, like those clothing sizes we see today. And whenever I see this, I always think about this. I always think about easy, normal, hard, these buckets of skill that we have, right? You know, like you got to fall within one of these buckets, and if it doesn't kind of work for you, this is how we kind of classify the work that we do. And I think that just like with that clothing, we have an opportunity to do a better fit than this, you know, and we're already starting to do this in a bunch of our games. So normally at this part of the presentation, I'd go through a bunch of examples, but I think you've kind of all seen them today. So I'm gonna skip a little bit ahead, and I'm gonna go into how I'm thinking about, like how I talk to people about how they wanna address this. So I first sort of talk to people about addressing limitations. Ian said earlier to address barriers. I agree with that completely. One of the ways I look at it, though, is I think about limitations. And so I don't like talking about conditions. I've been in this a long time. I work with John here. John always like tells me I've got the wrong condition. You know, I'm not a medical professional. You know, like Eric or Ken, those guys. Those guys are the people that I go to when I need to talk about conditions. Maybe not you, Ken, maybe more Eric. But I like to think about limitations. So, you know, the reason why I have this framework, and I'm a designer. Who in here is a designer? So who of the, among the designers likes tangible guidance? We all like tangible guidance. We also don't like being told how to design. It's kind of the conundrum of design, right? It's like, when we think about accessibility, there's always a lot of like, if you're gonna do this, you should do this. And as a designer, I'm always like, I don't really like being told what to design. I like to be told what the problem is. So that's where I'm trying to think about this framework to kind of address. So when I think about mobility and dexterity limitations, I've broken it down like this. This list is fluid. At the same time, I'm trying to keep it concise. So I think about things like minimum strength. How much strength do I actually have to hold the device or use the controls that I'm asking someone to do? And have I covered enough range? So reduced endurance, and this can be either through strength or pain. How long can I actually play? We see this a lot with people with sort of repetitive stress conditions, like arthritis or, you know, repetitive stress disorder. We talk to people who say, I can only play Destiny for 2 hours a night, but man, those are the 2 hours that like my whole day is for, right? And they can only play for 2 hours a night because basically their repetitive stress disorder stops them from doing it. Stiffness, probably when I think about this, it is probably mostly when I think about people with cerebral palsy, but that notion of muscle stiffness and that idea that I can't, I don't have that fluidity of movement that some might have. Involuntary movements or tics. This is why we have things like, I always get sticky keys and the other thing mixed up. Filter keys. I always forget which one is for involuntary movement. I think it's filter keys, right? Filter keys on Windows. So if you hit a key, it's not like basically punching in like a bunch of E's, things like that. Shaky movements or tremors, as Ian said before, like Parkinson's. I think about posture and balance, coordination, slowed down movement, reaction, amputations and malformations, and a recent one that we just added, and Ian helped me add this one, which was height, because now we're talking about VR. And height is a big deal, you know, because if you say, oh, reach up here to grab something, and you can't reach it up there, you know, you're kind of, that's a barrier in that game that you can't get past. We think about hearing. We think about the degrees of hearing loss, and these are all things that are kind of online for those who are hard of hearing, like from slight to profound beyond. We think about bilateral versus unilateral and systemetrical versus asymmetrical, fluctuating versus stable hearing loss, tinnitus, ringing in the ears, how that affects that sort of experience. We also need to throw in dizziness and balance in here, even though that might seem like a mobility thing, inner ear disorders, like vestibular disorders. We want to make sure that we're not doing anything that triggers that. And I have little d deaf in here, not big D deaf. I have little d deaf, basically, which means a sort of total hearing loss. So when we think about vision, you know, I see, look at Ben smiling at me. There's a lot here. We talk about color blindness a lot. We've talked about it a lot today. I will say that as everyone gets older, you can have good visual acuity, but you will lose the ability to perceive contrast. And that's something that is a little bit hard to wrap your head around. So when you hear us talk about making sure that your UI has enough contrast, that's a big one. That helps people with a lot of vision conditions. This notion of decreased light sensitivity is really interesting. Recently, we've been doing some work around coming up with the notion of what is high contrast video. Has anyone ever turned on high contrast mode, either on their console or in Windows? Everything kind of goes black and white, it's extreme contrast. What is that concept applied to video, and how do you increase the contrast of video without too much degrading what the original intent of the artist was to do it? I mean, I think there's some flexibility there. But what we've learned in that process is that bringing up low light to a level where people can see it is really important. But if we blow out those highlights, it hurts everybody's eyes. Who's like, whoever is sat in their basement with their Xbox with the lights off, and then somehow turned on like Xbox Help or something, and like it's like blown out your irises because all of a sudden the background's white. So that notion of sensitivity. Obviously, there's decreased visual acuity. When we talk about low vision is defined as someone who has a visual acuity of less than 20/80 that can't be corrected by glasses. That's what low vision is. clouding or floaters like cataracts. One of the interesting things about cataracts, we talked about colorblindness a lot today. There are twice as many Americans that have cataracts as there are those that are colorblind. And that's a lot of people. That's not saying that you should do one and not the other or target whatever. I just want to kind of put that out there that there are a lot of Americans that have cataracts. It's 22 million. Tunnel vision, blind spots, and of course, blindness. Figuring out how we think about those things. So I'm going to get into, what am I got here? Oh, so this is a little video I've got. It's called First Person Shooters with Low Vision. And I'm going to show three games. I'm going to show Battlefield 1, Overwatch, and Super Hot. So Battlefield 1, gray on gray. You know, Overwatch, bright colors, super hot, stylistically high contrast. So for a lot of these games, like Battlefield 1, the realistic visuals of the players of this game are what they value, but the gray-on-gray figures don't provide enough contrast for people with low vision to play. And I use this word very specifically on an equal playing field with others. So if you can see this, you're the cheater. One of my favorite things about Overwatch is, and when we talk about Overwatch's sound a lot, but the bright colors of Overwatch and the fact that there's a lot of target outlines in this game really make it a really interesting game for people with vision conditions. It's much more accessible than a lot of first-person shooters. Plus, it's hella fun. So the next game that we're going to show here is Super Hot. Has anyone, did we show Super Hot today? Okay, Super Hot, stylistic characters. The enhanced color contrast scheme of this game, along with the game mechanic that enemies only move when you do, make this a really interesting game for people with low vision. You should go buy this, it's a lot of fun. But the style of this game, which is you have these bright red figures on this muted gray background, it really makes it easy for people to see this game. And it's, you know, it's really fun. And so later, if you guys come over to Studio B, we can play this game. And we can use some of the simulators, like what Josh has. And you can kind of see what I mean about how some of these things work. So I've got this little video part here. I'll just leave it for a few seconds, where I'm showing all three of the games at the same time. You can kind of see how that goes. Was that example helpful? I don't ever actually ask that a lot. But I'm in here, so I'm gonna workshop this thing. Did that help you guys understand some stuff? Cool. So this next sort of bit of how is something that I think a lot of people have touched on today. We touch on this a lot in the community, is this notion of extending continuums. So if you've defined a set of parameters for your game from easy to hard, I'm asking and I'm trying to encourage you to think about how you can expand those parameters. So I like to talk about brightness settings in this thing a lot. Brightness is an accessibility setting, straight up. I don't care what anyone says. Being able to see the game is accessibility. Who in here, when they adjust the bright, when you're starting up a game and they tell you to adjust the gamma settings to just barely see the logo, who like cranks it a little bit higher? Yeah, you do. Right? So you kind of get in there. So think about, like, that's what I think about with, like, overt and subtle. We also think about fast, slow, weak, strong, less enemies, more enemies, lots of ammo, less ammo, lots of buttons, less buttons. But how can we extend these continuums, like, even further, right? I mean, this just is more of a diagram to explain this idea. But I think this bottom one is like, if your game needs like every button on the controller, or in the case of Halo, some double ones, you know, what's it, the bashing?
Melee with a sprint.
Yeah, there you go, that one. think about how your game can have less controls. We actually did a game jam a couple months ago with the Gaming Garage, and it was called Simply Immersive. And the purpose of this game jam was to look at How people could, and the games are all up online. If you go to the Gaming Garage site internally, you can kind of see them. How people could design a game that was, that they wanted to be immersive, but the controls were simple, or the rules were simple, or everything about it was just simple, but still be immersive. So I'm going to talk a bit about an idea that we had in the in the Halo Inclusive Sprint. When you play a game, there's often a tutorial mode, right? And during that tutorial mode, you learn to play the game. And when we think about things like dynamic difficulty adjustment, that's something that we like talk about in gaming design, like being able to have a game that adjusts difficulty depending on that player ability. I like to think about, well, what if we actually started to measure those in some really profound ways during these tutorial modes? How could I adjust the game sort of from the onset to be more attuned to the player's ability? And we have things at our disposal now that, that kind of make this idea really interesting when we think beyond a single game. I mean, one of the advantages that we have here at Microsoft is, and I'm going to use this word in the golf sense, so please forgive me, what could your handicap be total for Xbox Live? Like, it, could I take the data from these reaction time or movement, or what kind of parameters can we grab about an individual from these tutorials and sort of have a score somewhere that we could use for all these games? So I'm not just tuning Halo Wars 2 here. I'm tuning every game that I play. Like, these are some of the things that when we think about how we can kind of push platform beyond what we're doing from title to title into something that makes gaming better on Xbox all up. And this idea is not original. This is from Mary Meeker's 2017 report. Does anyone know what this report is? Has anyone heard of this report? This report is used, it's not that surprising. This report is like one of those things that comes out in the Valley every year, and it's like the kind of holy grail that kind of like everyone, every startup looks at to see what the internet trends are going to be, what Mary Meeker sort of says. And she had, I think, 80 slides of her 300 slide report this year was on gaming. So the Valley is coming for gaming. And she had this in here, which was really cool, and it comes from the Games for Learning Institute, this idea of like flow being at this point between anxiety and boredom, you know? And how do you measure that? And how can we dynamically tune our experiences to keep people in that flow? So I really like this slide because I thought it really fit with what I was sort of talking about, and it's really interesting to kind of think that. So I'm going to wrap up, and I'm going to invite Evelyn up here. What I'm hoping to leave you folks with is just basically these things. The notion that disability is designed, that no one is average. I want people to start thinking about barriers being ergonomic. And I really hope that people can consider that fit is an opportunity. And that's, I think, me. Yeah. You go. Do you want to have questions before?
Can I steal your thunder there?
Yeah.
I'd like to introduce Evelyn Thomas. And Evelyn, like Bryce, is one of my accessibility conspirators. She is the platform PM for all things accessibility. And if you are shocked by the fact that we have a screen reader on our platform, if you've ever been amazed that we have high contrast, if you ever thought, wow, that co-pilot thing's really cool, yay. Evelyn. Seriously, I've been working in Xbox for 15 years, and she's been able to accomplish more in just the last few years than just anybody else. So I just want to give her an extra round of applause. Really appreciate everything she's done. And Evelyn is, I want to, and I'm already stealing some of your content. I won't say your thunder, but I will say, Evelyn is a fantastic resource. So, you know, if you have questions, if you, especially around technical implementation or the things that we have on the platform that can make your life easier when you're designing the game, Evelyn's a great person to reach out to. So with that, Evelyn Thomas.
First of all, I want to say,
do you want to get the mic?
It's not just me.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
It's
Not just me. There are a lot of really talented people I work with that help get the stuff done that we want to get done. I'm just the whip. Funny story about what Brannon mentioned. So I've known Brannon for a little while now, and he has for years been saying, you know, I'll see a screen reader on Xbox when pigs fly. So when I actually finally got the okay from leadership that we were going to actually build this and commit to putting it into our platform in 2015, I just sent an email to Brannon with just a picture of pig with wings on it. So how many people in the room know who I am?
Now?
Beyond. So for those who don't, I'm on the platform team at Xbox, and for probably on and off since about 2010, I've been working on accessibility in one form or another. I actually was, as most new PMs are, you get thrown into settings as the work that you do as your introduction to Xbox. And as part of settings, there was this thing called the CVAA coming down the pike, and nobody knew what it was. So they said, hey, give it to Evelyn. She's got settings. Give her accessibility, too. She'll figure it out. So I spent a lot of time working on building out a knowledge base and an understanding of the type of things that we really needed to do to make our platform accessible, starting at the hardware and working all the way up to the software. So it's passion that has brought me to where I am. And in funny story, I don't know how many people here work on the Xbox platform team or have been involved with Xbox development from a software perspective, but one of the common things that happens when you join the Xbox team is, at least from my experience, my leadership team said, hey, welcome to Xbox. My manager said, the first thing I generally like to ask everybody when you join the team is, what's your gamer score? And I said, 169. And he said, well, 169,000, that's respectable. I said, now hack off the zeros, just 169. And to that he said, what the bleep are you doing at Xbox? And I said, building a platform for people like me. I want a platform that makes it easy for me to play. I've got some limitations that make gameplay a little more challenging, and I want to unblock the capabilities on our platform at our API level all the way up to the software to make it possible for gamers to actually use our product. So, I had a really great presentation. Bryce had some wonderful information about, as a designer, I don't want you to tell me what to do. I want to be able to be creative and come up with solutions.
We're fussy that way.
I'm the engineer, and I know there are a lot of engineers in this room, and you want me to tell you what you can do, like what APIs you can leverage, how you can implement this stuff into your platform. Alas, we don't have time for me to do that today. We ran a little bit along. So what's on the screen right now is an alias, X1ACC, which is Xbox Accessibility. So I encourage each and every one of you in this room that wants deeper understanding about the platform APIs, guidelines, and solutions that we provide at Xbox to make it easier for you to build on top of, build your titles, build your software in the OS, reach out to this alias. It's staffed by a bunch of really passionate, knowledgeable people that will really be able to assist you in this space. And I'll be more than happy to set up individual meetings with you or your teams to go through the technical solutions that we can provide for you to sort of reduce that development barrier and make it easier for you to actually build on our platform.
Evelyn, is your GDC talk online?
My GDC talk is online, and I'll also include that in the deck at the end in resources so that you can link to it. All right, so last one's a shameless plug. So as Brannon mentioned earlier in the morning, we actually have built out this thing called the Inclusive Technologies Lab. Bryce is wearing one of the t-shirts right there. And through the passionate efforts of some really dedicated people on the hardware team, the software team, and just some general folks in Xbox All Up, we built out this space that is entirely dedicated to gaming accessibility. So we've got a couple of goals, and I'm going to read them because they're very specific goals, and I want to be very clear about what we're trying to achieve with this space. So the first one is to build empathy amongst the visitors to the challenges that gamers with various disabilities face in gaming. And with demonstration stations, education tools, the lab provides a space to learn, be inspired, and be creative. And I encourage you all to schedule time in this space. We built it, but it's for you to come in and learn from what's offered in the space and host accessibility-related design sprints, creative innovation ideas are inspired out of this space, so we strongly encourage you to use it. The next goal is to demonstrate a commitment and strengthen our affinity with accessibility gaming communities. And the labs used to bring people in from the outside of Microsoft to educate us on the needs of our gamers with disabilities and allow us to actually bring folks that are from the community, from hardware providers, software providers, business-focused accessibility developers, as well as advocacy groups and charities to come in and educate us. Because as many, many people have mentioned throughout the day today, we can't presume to know ourselves what the needs of our gamers are. So the only way you know is to ask them and get them to come in and educate us and teach us how we can build better products. And then the last one, and this is a little bit self-serving for Microsoft, but honestly, rising tide floats all boats, in my opinion. I want to see the democratization of accessibility all up. It's not an Xbox thing. It's not a Sony thing. It's not a Nintendo thing. It's a gaming thing. So I look at this that I want to be, by putting this lab out there to the world, I want to demonstrate that we're trying to lead in this space. And by showing that we're leading in this space, hopefully we're going to encourage a little bit of competitive nature among the other console providers out there to actually start really, truly investing in accessibility all up on their platforms.
By the way, it isn't out to the world yet.
Yep.
You guys are going to go see it.
Yep.
But we won't actually announce it externally until mid-month.
Yep, that's actually the last thing I was going to say.
Oh,
so I'm going to encourage all of you after this day to come by the lab. We're hosting an event, drinks, food, open space for the lab. It's our soft open. We'll publicly announce it on July 10th-ish of this next month. And so you guys are getting a sneak peek as to what it's going to look like.
Awesome.